Oh, Ive, it really irritates me that there are some goyim out there who have the chutzpah to say that Jewish people don't have souls. Because we do. We do have souls, all right? And lately I've been being called a big schnoz, cheap, devil horn, gelt grubbin, Jew bag by everybody in school. And Jews do have souls, okay? I go to synagogue. I got bar mitzvahed. You don't know me. You're not Adonai, our God. I remember my Haftorah, okay? Vayikravu, Yami David. All right? If you think I have a soul, then tell me. Otherwise, Achaza blei dechaza, you shmendrix. Fishtay? I'm serious. Like, I'm getting sick and tired of everybody making fun of Jews. Like, ah! Jews control the banks and they drink the blood of Christian children! Ah! Really? Really? That gives you nachas to make fun of Jewish people like that? And Jewish people do have souls, okay? I got payas. I have payas. I'm payas, okay? And I'm proud of it. I mean, everybody gets respect. Mormons, Scientologists, gingers. What makes Jews so different, huh? What is the fuck the difference? Okay, you tell me, you schmucks. Okay, I got Jew curls, and I'm proud of it, okay? Hebrew, I'm proud of it.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining me this evening, or this afternoon, for you Americans out there. I am William Hewitt, and I am broadcasting live from the vast plains of somewhere in the old Boer Republic. Let's see, what is this here? Update spyware protection. No, I don't want to update my spyware protection. No, I probably need it. With all these G-D damn Jews out here causing me problems all the time. Like that. Ugh, I gotta watch my tongue. Like some idiot Jew last night on my Facebook page going around commenting. His comments were absurd and really retarded. But yeah, he doesn't like the fact that I expose Jews for the parasites and terrorists that they really are. And oh yes, I could probably add pederasts, and they do drink the blood of Aryan children, or I guess like the Jew says, the Christian children. Yeah, did you like how he played that off? What, that gives you nachas? What, you can talk about Jews that way because we drink the blood of Christian children? What are you doing? He's admitting it right there, folks. Jeez. He's more worried about people making fun of Jews than Jews actually drinking the blood of the goyim. So revealing. So telling. So, here I am, back behind the DeHewitt House Radio Golden G-A-B microphone. Yes, goys are broadcasting. And I will be back to my old self again, folks. Yes, I did 3 straight episodes on alchemy. And Well, I feel it's very important that I got that information out there. However, I do realize that not everyone may have been ready for it. Yeah, I think I've got, I could tell on my website alone that people weren't very interested in it. And again, that's okay. But I hope I don't or have not lost my usual and regular listeners. It's only a matter of time, folks, until I get back on my usual, my usual topics and inform you about our parasitical and terrorist enemy. And wow, will I be doing that tonight? I have a jam-packed, a loaded show, just teeming with knowledge tonight, folks. Tonight, I'm going to be talking about the Kahilla. Yes, the Kahilla, that vile and dangerous organization that so many of my folk really know nothing about. The Kahilla, folks, is really the umbrella organization for the world system, this Jew world order system that we all find ourselves enslaved within. Now, many who are familiar with the Kahilla really are afraid to talk about it. At least I've learned this in my studies. I've learned this in my research. Sure, occasionally a brave soul, a brave Aryan, will mention the Kahilla, but then quickly never mention it again for some reason. I've heard this on radio shows where people will say those two words, the Kahilla, and then really never to speak of it again. And that's a bloody shame, folks, because this organization or this umbrella organization that has really, like I said, the entire world system attached to it, well, it needs to be discussed. It needs to be exposed. And who else better to do it than William D. Hewitt? Many of you probably are familiar with the Kahilla. You just have never really heard that word or that phrase of words. But there are plenty of diagrams or plenty of, I don't know if map would be the right word, but pictures or like drawings, maps of organizations that are connected. And one fairly popular one out there shows in the middle, you know, the Order of the Illuminati. Okay? Yes, the Illuminati. And to the left of it, it will say the conspiracy to rule the world. And to the right of it is House of Derothschild. And then from there, all these arrows connect these other organizations. And this, all these connecting of the organizations as if they were dots, well, it paints a very vivid picture of just who rules the world and how it's being ruled. Yes, it's ruled by corporations, which I spoke of an awful lot of that series before the series I did on alchemy, you know, with the straw man, those shows, and how governments and corporations are really one and the same. Because governments are corporations. But from the top down, if you use the pyramid structure, yes, the king is the capstone. And not many people know who the king really is, including myself, folks. I do not know whom the king of the Kahila is. But before I speculate on who he is, I probably should explain what I think a little before I get into the Kahila when it comes to the king and when it comes to the very, very top of that pyramid. Now, Mike Sledge and I have done shows on this, and really, I expected to receive a lot of flack for these shows because of what I was insinuating. Yes, I truly believe, and I really hate that word believe, but to use the word believe implies that I honestly do not know. So if I do not know something, I will never pretend to know. So when I say that I believe, this really gets me into trouble sometimes with some people. I've even mentioned on the show Richard and I did that I believe that the top, the very top of the Kahila are really, well, I'll say it again, Aryans who are at the very, very top of the pyramid. Now, this is not a very popular speculation. So, what is it, DeHewitt? We have our own people at the top genociding us? Well, yep, that's what I would suggest, folks. Unfortunately. Now, when I say Aryans are at the top of the pyramid, or Aryans are at the, running the world, the Jew world order system, I'm implying that these Aryans are not necessarily Aryan man. Yes, I've written an article called Fallen Angels, Aliens, or Aryans. So, before I get into the Kahila, I want to explain what I really, truly believe or think, not know, but think who is at the top. And I'll do it by reviewing this article that I wrote about 4 years ago. The topic of fallen angels or fallen aliens, or could they be fallen Aryans, has always fascinated me and captured my imagination. Nonetheless, I've never felt comfortable writing about it because I did not fully understand everything due to false religious doctrine, false descriptions, and these false titles of fallen angels that has been given. Now, that is until recently, folks. With a new mindset and understanding, my conclusion and educated opinion is that these so-called fallen angels are actually ancient Aryans. Notice the E-L in Angel in Elohim. Now, to be clear, I am not 100% sure that Aryans are of the house of El or Elohim, but it makes sense to me that they would be. It's very difficult to trust or to believe anything in that Jew Bible. But I'm trying to establish here, trying to make a point about whom the very top of the Kahila is, whom the top of the pyramid is. And Mike Sledge even agrees with me. And if Mike Sledge agrees with me, well, that makes me feel very comfortable because we do not disagree very often. And Mike Sledge, well, I've never really had disagreed with much he's ever said over the years either. And so for him and I to have come to the same conclusion, well, I would take it to the bank, folks. So this is why I'm comfortable enough to actually make such a bold statement that Aryans are at the top of the pyramid, that Aryans are at the top of the Jewish Kahila. Yes, I'll get to this, folks. I'll get to it. It is the Jew Kahila. And Jews are God's chosen people, after all. So it could not, may not be such a stretch that an Aryan or a group of Aryans, our ancient ancestors or the angels, if you will, well, it might not be so far of a stretch that they are the top. And they definitely have longer lifespans than we do. So they are extremely powerful. But anyway, these angels were a group of Aryans. And these ancient Aryans, they have terraformed the earth. And I recently had figured out how they had terraformed the earth. I have spoken of this, which is an entire show in itself, in a few other broadcasts about how there are no forests on flat earth. Yes, folks, there used to be gigantic silicon trees, and these silicon trees were chopped down by these Aryans. And when the silicon hit the earth's atmosphere, otherwise oxygen, well, the silicon turned into precious stones. And so when these gigantic trees were chopped down, well, they started mining for the precious stones that petrified when the trees were chopped down. Makes sense. This is what mountains really are. But this show is not about mountains, folks. This is about the Kahila and who is at the top and what the Kahila is. So, I do not believe that Aryan man, woman, and child are the creation of these fallen Aryan angels. I believe we are their offspring. Now, to make a long story short, the first rebellion that we hear about in the Bible, about these angels, happened here on earth. And the events mentioned in many ancient texts, such as the Popol Vuh, such as in the Jew Bible, are indeed true. These angels are called the fallen ones because they became corrupt and rebelled against the Aryan king who resides in heaven or in the realm above the earth. Or maybe even below the earth. I'm not sure. But they did not rebel against the Aryan king while they were in heaven. They rebelled while on earth. And the noble Aryan king, whose name I do not know, it could be Wotan, possibly. Well, he's not God Almighty. God Almighty is eternal spirit or consciousness, which comes from spiritual source, which all ancient Aryans have within our bodies. And, well, it was furthermore blown into, the breath of life was blown into us, which only the white Aryan race of man has this breath of life, otherwise known as spirit. Hence, the Aryan spirit, or spirit of the Aryan, which is the title of the show Mike Sledge and I did, or used, when we talked about these topics in the past. So, this spirit is known as the breath of life. And it is important to understand that these fallen angels or Aryans, biggest problem with us is that we were given this breath of life. Now, I say this when I was under the impression that we were the creation, not the offspring. But there's an interesting quote from Plato dating back to 360 BC. And that quote is, "For many generations, as long as the divine nature lasted in them, they were obedient to the laws and well affectioned towards the God whose seed they were, for they possessed true and in every way great spirits. However, over time, the Aryans became corrupt when the divine portion began to fade away and became diluted too often and too much with the mortal admixture, and the human nature got the upper hand. They then, being unable to bear their fortune, behaved unseemly, and to him who had an eye to see, grew visibly debased." Yes, folks, this event of which the breath of life or spirit being blown into the race of the Aryan man started the cosmic or spiritual war between these angels or Aryans. And a group of these Aryans hated that newly created white man, which is a whole nother story. I'm starting to believe that maybe I was correct about both. Maybe we are the offspring and the creation. Because there is a split within the white race, folks. And that split is RH, negative blood. Maybe us, RH negative blood Aryans, are indeed the offspring. While maybe the positive, well, who knows? Maybe they are the creation. Again, that's another show. I'm really still trying to build up here so that you understand where I'm coming from when I say that Aryans are at the top of the Jewish Kehillah. Because I know, believe you me, folks, I know just how ridiculous and angering that statement sounds. But, as I stated, a group of these Aryans, they hated that the newly created white man was given the breath of life, and therefore they rebelled with their new self-proclaimed Aryan king of earth, known as Hillel. Yes, Hillel, the Lord of the Lords. Hillel was ordered by the Aryan king of heaven to watch over newly created white man, or maybe even the other races. But he absolutely refused. And many of Hillel's fellow Aryan brothers joined him in rebellion and shared in utter despisal of this creation. And Hillel actually said, "I will not bow to man because I am made of lightning and they are made of mud." Now, because of this jealousy of the Aryan man receiving Aryan spirit, making us better than the fallen angels in some way, his goal was to destroy us. However, to my understanding, folks, there are rules these fallen angels or Aryans must follow when it comes to our destruction, when it comes to our genocide. They are not permitted to directly cause harm to us. So they use their chosen ones, like they, spiritless, mixed-race Jews in the other races, such as the Mongoloid and Negroid, as proxies to destroy the few of us non-contaminated, race-mixed white men and women who still have the breath of life remaining within us. And the breath of life, folks, is only compatible with the white man, woman, and child's genetics, or DNA. And still, to this day, we are experiencing the wrath of Hillel in the form of white genocide taking place in every white country, which has been going on all throughout our history. So, to be clear here, there are two infighting groups of angels, or Aryans, who have been warring against one another and us over the event in which the breath of life, or Aryan spirit, was breathed into the white man. One side of these Aryans have our best interest, while the fallen Aryans do not. And this war is still going on today, and it seems the fallen Aryan angels, who are the world's masters, well, they use their chosen, proxy armies of Satanim Jews who work for higher-up Jews in the Kehillah to destroy us. Unfortunately for us, folks, they seem to be winning this war for the time being. Now, I hope that makes things a little bit clearer. You have to understand whom the top of the pyramid is. I believe it's Hillel. These fallen Aryan angels, and even the ones who have not fallen, the ones who love us and on our side, they live much longer than we do, and so they have complete control over what goes on in this realm. And they use Jews as middle managers, maybe even upper middle managers, to do the dirty work, since they are not permitted to directly have contact with us or to directly genocide us. I hope that I am clear. We have these fallen Aryan angels using Jews as middle and upper middle managers to rule this world. And the Jews who do not like to get their hands dirty, well, they use the Negroids, they use the mixed races of the world and the other races to directly genocide us. This is evident. This is happening in every one of our countries. This cannot be denied. I do not believe that Jews are these brilliant creatures that everyone gives them credit for. I really believe that these Aryan angels or aliens or whatever you want to call them, they have implemented the plan because they live to be so much older and live longer than us. And they use Jews to do their dirty work. So, now that I've set the table here, now that I've explained whom I believe the king of the Kehillah is, let's get into the rest of the Kehillah. This is more provable, what I'm about to explain. So we have the top, we have the king, and around the king, we have a circle of 12. And this circle of 12, folks, are generally known as the Illuminati, or these 12 or 13 families, their bloodlines, okay? And then further down the pyramid, we have the Council of 300. And this Council of 300 makes up of these Illuminati families, okay? Now, from there under, here, in fact, I'll just look right at the diagram here. If you want to understand this more, I would really suggest you look up the circle of 12, which really is the circle of 13, And then from there, you look up the Council of 300. And then from the Council of 300... Alright, here is that pyramid, yes. The Black Nobility. So yes, under the Council of 300, sometimes called the Committee of 300, you have the think tanks, right? And these think tanks are really just NGOs, otherwise known as non-government organizations. And they form what's known as the Round Table. All right? Now this Round Table, of course, you would have the King and the 12 in the circle. And then from there is the 300, the Committee of 300, which makes up the Council of Foreign Relations, the United Nations, the Bilderberg Group, the Club of Rome, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and the Trilateral Commission, right? Everyone's heard of those. So underneath the think tanks or NGOs, that's where the central banks and the tax revenues, such as the IRS, which is theirs, and the interest revenue police. Underneath them, you'd have the corporations. Yes, the corporations. You name it. From the Seven Sisters of the Oil to IBM, to the pharmaceutical industry, like Pfizer, you name it, folks. These corporations are all interconnected and all controlled by the same groups, the same families. And then under the corporations, you have the religious organizations. Then you have the governments and the intelligence communities. Then the military, the police, the courts, and the prisons. Then you have the media and the schools. You're seeing how this pyramid works. Are you noticing just how far down we are at the bottom of this pyramid? Yes, we are the Goyim slaves. We are their slaves. This, folks, is why I did my shows on straw man. This is why I talked about why we need to get out of the system. This is really why I did my shows on alchemy. Because if you can spiritually liberate yourself from this world, from this controlled goy plantation, if you can be in charge of your own destiny, well, folks, this is how you escape this Black Nobility, this pyramid, the Kahilla. This is how we escape it, because we're not going to do it by fighting their system. Their system is worldwide. Their system is covering every inch of this physical world. So if you want to escape it or be free, you need to do the inner alchemical work. There's no other way I can find that will set you free. So we understand now whom is at the top. We understand what the system is, what this control grid of a system is. We understand whom the House of Rothschild is. We know whom, you know, the order is, such as the Masons. We know who the House of Rockefeller is. We know the Council on Foreign Relations. We know the United Nations. We know all of these at the top, down to the local Communist Party in your community, down to the lowly Sanim Jew who all a Sayanim is a Jew living outside of Israel who aids and abets Mossad agents in every country. Yes, they might offer them intelligence. They might offer the Mossad agents a bed in their own home. There is a very interesting poem that I'll be reading about the Sayanim. So let me get to just who the Kehillah is. The Kehillah is an organization few people know about. And this super secret corporate organization is governed by a council of 300 members who meet periodically to plot the Kehillah's international agenda. And at the head of the council is the Circle of 12, with the king ruling as the 13th member. They do, in fact, control most people, I would say almost all people on earth, through their various financial, economical, political, medical, educational, social, and religious programs due to their unlimited funds and resources. They control mainstream media propaganda and have a highly complex system of local, regional, and international organizations at their disposal. Think of Agenda 21 now, folks, with this information I've just provided you. They want their Jew world order, and they want it now. And they used to do it only from an international point of view. Then they've done it from the state point. Now they're doing it at the local level. This is how they will get a one world government through the local governments. Because if they can get every local government on board and following the same agenda, this, folks, is the Jew New World Order. This international criminal cabal controls the majority of the world's political fortunes. And a small part of this international group are the so-called Bilderbergers and other groups like it that I've mentioned earlier in this broadcast. Now, higher level members meet annually in secret without media coverage, of course. Well, that is until controlled opposition Alex Jones, quote, strapped right on in, folks, and blew the story wide open. In reality, Alex Jones did not reveal anything of value to us. However, he more or less covered for them. So as Object Lesson shows, it is easy to be tough if you own all opposition and control news coverage in the media. Now, at the Kehillah's head, as I said, is an unknown man with the title The King. Thank you very much. No, not that king, folks. The king. And he is the world leader. Now, the world is divided into an eastern and a western hemisphere. And it is divided by whom is known as a sponsor, who oversees the princes of the eastern and western hemispheres. And they are all subject to the king. And like I said, I spent the first 15, 20 minutes trying to explain to you the king, I really, truly believe, because I cannot prove it, is Hillel, the Lord of the Lords. Now, Hillel has a brother. You could compare Hillel to Enki and Enlil, and they have offspring such as Marduk, and There's rumor that there has been a power struggle at just whom is going to be the Lord or the jealous God of this world, of this creation. But under the king, sponsor and two princes are 7 leaders. And these 7 leaders are known as the seventh grade. And each of them know one another, okay? Now, each of these 7 has 7 ministers among them who are of the 6th grade. And there are 7 heralds under each of them, the 5th grade. Each of them, again, has 7 couriers, and they are the 4th grade. 7 scriveners under each of them are the 3rd grade, which in turn, 7 auditors under each of them makes up the 2nd grade. And then there are 7 mutes under each of the auditors, and they make up the 1st grade. Meaning there is a total of 1,921,601 members in the 2 hemispheres together. And that, folks, is not even including members of the Round Table or the Council of Foreign Relations, the United Nations, the Bilderberg Group, Club of Rome, Royal Institute of International Affairs, and the Trilateral Commission. This is a huge organization, and it is a worldwide organization. And the Kahila is so security conscious that the so-called Prince of the East and Prince of the West receive their orders from the 7th grade rather than from the sponsor. Not even the princes always know who is what and what is what. Now, with this extensive network, the Kahila has a, quote, global policy that with a minimum effort to communicate. So within minutes after a mission from the king, his chosen ones, otherwise known as Jews, prepare to implement it in order to promote their goals via strikes, revolution, student uprisings, riots, or any given act that you hear about on the mainstream Jew media. Yes, folks, now it's starting to make sense. This is where these strikes come from. When you have Negroids here in South Africa going on strike, they aren't organizing themselves together and going on strike. No, 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 folks. This comes from the top. Now, does it make sense how these strikes start? How these revolutions, such as the French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Arab Spring, all of these revolutions, folks, do not start organically or at the grassroots level. No, 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 folks. They start from the top, from the king. The king of the Kahila. It doesn't even really matter who that king is. That's why I don't care one way or another if I'm correct and it is Hillel or not. It doesn't matter. Because this extensive, worldwide, global network called the Kahila, they do all the work. So these actions, I mentioned these strikes, revolutions, student uprisings, riots, these actions aim to improve their control. When I say their, I mean the Kahila. I mean the Illuminati. I mean the king. These actions aim to improve their control over money, propaganda, and even the white race's seed, believing that the Aryan folk should not have legitimate political or social lives unless, of course, they approve. And their policy principles are defined in the said recipe for world domination, otherwise known as the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, the Learned Elders of Zion. And you will notice that Protocol 3 refers to the Jewish symbolic snake that political Zionism and its counterpart, Communist Judaism, propose. The king is the head of the serpent who represents those who were inducted into international Jewry, with the body of the snake complete from the low-level Sayanim, who are just average Jews in each community that the Mossad relies on across the globe. To provide shelter, money, and logistical support for higher-ups in the Kehillah. So who are the Sayanim, folks? This is very important to know, because these Sayanim work on the ground level. They mingle and interact with everyday people just like you and I, folks. A Sayan, which is just one Sayanim, okay, singular, is a Jew living outside Israel who volunteers to provide assistance to Israel and or the Israeli Mossad, utilizing the capacity of their own nationality to procure assistance. And this assistance includes facilitating medical care, money, logistics, right? Intelligence gathering. And the estimates put the number of Sayanim in the hundreds of thousands. I would say that's a conservative number. I would go with in the millions. But they may work in the capacity of unregistered representatives of the government of Israel or in their respective nations. Yes, their respective nations that they parasite off of. And this is why I'll be talking about the Aryan Reich towards the end of the show. And I'll explain to you what I mean by an Aryan Reich. And I'll be asking the world of every race, of every ethnicity, why we allow this Kehillah and their Jew world order to infiltrate all of our governments, to rule us all over, to rule over us from all over the world. You see, they do this undercover. Most people of the world believe that their own nation is ruled by their own people. This, folks, is nowhere near the truth. Jews rule every government, and they rule their own Israel, while they are allowed to rule their own Israel. No one else in this world is allowed or permitted to rule over their own, which I don't even like the word rule. I don't want to rule over anybody. In my ideal Aryan Reich. But again, I'll get to that towards the end of the show. Right now, I'm going to read to you a poem called Perfidious Sayanim by Dagmar Bren. Okay? He's our friend. He's our teacher. In the church, he is the preacher. He's the doctor who attends the family. As a lawyer, he is trusted. And like you, he is disgusted with injustice, lawlessness, and perfidy. And he feels for our troubles. Well, he knows our deepest longing. Always gives us sound advice, and it may seem that he cares as does no other. and he truly is our brother. But we find one day he's one of the Saiyan. She's our neighbor, she's our lover, she's an actress and a mother. She's our role model and a socialite. Every topic of the day, pulling strings, she's in the fray. She's an activist and does not shirk a fight. Well, she knows to play our heartstrings with sweet words that deepest care brings. Her intentions sure are true as they may seem. But one day there is a division, and we see by her decision that she is and was one of the Saiyan. In their circles, at the tables, in the mansions, boats, and stables, all the rich and influential gather round. They are with their folk of their station, and they get their information where the useful goy are, the Saiyan is found. When you cross their lines, it's chilling, and you understand they're willing to root you out of job, house, land, and it would seem that the man you had befriended played a game, and now it's ended. You know much too late, he's one of the Saiyan. By way of destruction, folks, thou shalt make war. Is it so surprising that Jews have been able to loot and wreck white civilizations for the past 2,000 years, and with increasing success over the past 200 years? Most white folks, my Aryan folk, do not know who their enemy is, what its nature is, or even where they come from. This is what I'm trying to get across to you folks. This is the Jew. The Jew rules this world by deception, as I read that quote of the Mossad. By way of deception, thou shalt make war. So, to be clear, my intention is to arm my Aryan race with knowledge. There's no excuse for people who have eyes to see and ears to hear to not know thy enemy in this day of age and to not understand where he came from. There's been a trail of blood running through white civilization for the last 2,000 years, even longer. White blood. And this white genocide must be stopped. Yes, folks, it must be stopped. We must understand and recognize Jew terrorism. We must understand that they are the victimizers, that they're the slave masters, that they're the world press censors, they're the gun controllers, they're the Holocaust fraudsters, they're the taxation police, they are the warmongers, they are financial manipulators, criminal monsters, mobsters, hate crime hoaxers, cultural destroyers, they're communists, they're Bolshevists, they're socialists, they're Zionists. And they use democracy. I have a clip of just how these Jews commit economic warfare and get away with it. And I think once you hear this clip, if Richard would so kindly play it for me, I think you'll be shocked at the methods here. You hear the words economic terrorism, but I don't think you understand just how simple it is, just how easy it is for them to get away with this. Richard, if you have that clip ready for me, I would greatly appreciate if you play it for me.
I'm John Perkins. I'm a U.S. citizen, born in the United States, raised in the United States. I'm a former economic hitman. We work very much like some of the hitmen for the mafia because we're looking for a favor later. And mafia people have done this, and gangsters have done this for ages. We just do it on a very large level with governments, with countries, huge level. And we're much more professional. We do this in many ways, but perhaps the most common is that economic hitmen will identify a country that has resources our corporations covet, like oil. And then we arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sister organizations. But the money never actually goes to the country. Instead, it goes to our own corporations to build big infrastructure projects in that country. Things that benefit a few very rich people in that country, as well as our own corporations, but don't help the majority of the people who are too poor. But these people, the poor people, are left holding a huge debt, and it's so huge that they can't possibly repay it. But in the process of trying to repay it, they create a situation where they can't afford to have good health programs or educational programs. So we economic hitmen go back in and we say, listen, you owe us a lot of money, you can't pay your debts, so give us a pound of flesh. Sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies, or vote with us on the next critical United Nations vote, or send troops in support of ours to someplace in the world, like Iraq. And in that way, we've really managed to create this empire. Because the fact of the matter is, we write the laws. We control the World Bank. We control the IMF. We even control the United Nations to a large degree. And so we write the laws. So the things economic hitmen are not illegal. Putting countries in huge debt and then demanding favors in return. That's not illegal. It should be. It isn't. Well, one of the characteristics of an empire is that it enforces its currency on the rest of the world. And we've really done that with the dollar. So in 1971, the United States had a tremendous amount of debt, and a lot of this was a result of the Vietnam War. And we were on the gold standard. So some of these other countries decided to call in their debts in gold because they didn't trust the dollar. Nixon refused to pay in gold, in fact took us off the gold standard because he knew he couldn't pay in gold. We didn't have the value. And so very quickly after that, we went on the oil standard. And I was a large part of that deal that we struck with Saudi Arabia, insisting that OPEC only sell oil in dollars. And so suddenly the dollar moves from the gold standard to the oil standard, which in many respects is a much more important standard because oil is intrinsically more valuable than gold in this day and age. And so suddenly the world can only buy oil for dollars, and the dollar is a very, very important currency. Today, the United States, once again, is a bankrupt country. We have huge amounts of debt, more debt than any country's ever had in the history of the world before. And if some other country to call that debt in a currency other than the dollar, we'd be in very, very serious trouble. Right now, they're only calling it in dollars because oil is the big commodity and you can only buy oil in dollars. But Saddam Hussein threatened to sell oil for something other than dollars just before he was taken down. Sometimes we economic hitmen fail to corrupt leaders of other countries, as I failed with Omar Torrijos in Panama and Jaime Roldos in Ecuador. It doesn't often happen, but when it does, then the jackals are sent in. And these are people who overthrow governments or assassinate their leaders. So when I failed with Jaime Roldos in Ecuador and Omar Torrijos in Panama, the jackals went in and assassinated them. On the few occasions where neither the economic hitmen nor the jackals are successful, then and only then do we send in the military. And this is exactly what happened in Iraq. The economic hitmen could not corrupt Saddam Hussein, could not bring him around. the jackals couldn't take him out, and so the military was sent in. The first time we sent the military in 1991, we destroyed his military and figured that he had been sufficiently chastised that now he would come around. And so during the 90s, the economic hitmen went back in to try to bring Saddam Hussein around, but he wouldn't give in. If he had, he'd still be running the country and we'd be selling him jets and tanks and everything else he wanted. But he didn't give in. The jackals couldn't assassinate him. His security forces were very good, and he had a lot of lookalike doubles, so his own security men didn't know whether they were guarding him or a double. So neither the economic hitmen nor the jackals succeeded the second time with Saddam Hussein, and at that point, we sent in the military again, and this time we took him out, and the rest is history.
Yep. History, folks. Very interesting. And I apologize for those of you who've been listening live who've not been able to hear what I've been saying for the last hour. This audio is very, very revealing in the fact that this is the handiwork of the Kahilla that I've been talking about the entire show. Now, a few things this man said in that audio is that the dollar and is backed by the oil, and in that the reason it is because Nixon took us off the gold standard, right? And I find that to be very interesting about Saddam Hussein, the great Satan, as he was called, right? God, even South Park, used their cartoon imagery as him being Satan. Now, who was he Satan for? Well, he was Satan for Jews. The Jews used this dollar, and then they pin it on the American people, this debt, right? But in reality, the dollar has nothing to do with the United States. It has nothing to do with the people. It has everything to do with Jews. And you heard what this guy said. He goes in and takes down governments. And he does it through economic warfare or economic terrorism. And if he fails to flip these leaders, these nationalist leaders, well, then the jackals go in. The mercenaries. Yes, they bring in these white men usually to go in and do the dirty work for Jew. And Saddam Hussein is a very important example. We were told that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction after the Jews took down their own World Trade Center building. None was ever found. But now you know the real reason why the United States had to get rid of Saddam Hussein. Because he would not play ball with the Jew banksters. And thus, they had to take him out. This is why they took Hitler out. Because he did not play ball with the Jew banksters. And actually eliminated their currency from Germany. This is the real reason World War Jew started, folks. Another man I will be using as an example. I was going to do it towards the end of the show, but I guess I could speak of him now and then talk about the Aryan Reich. Hence the title of the show, The Aryan Reich versus the Kahilla's Jew World Order. When I say Aryan Reich, I am implying that white folk have their own nation, have their own country where they are able to run their own affairs and not be enslaved by these terrorist and parasite fucking Jews. Pardon my French, Richard, if you want to delete that F word. Yes, I desire an Aryan Reich to where we are able to be free and creative and to raise our families in cleanness and wholesomeness and righteousness rather than this Kahila's Jew world order where they bring in every non-white under the sun to ultimately genocide us. If that genocide is via race mixing, if that genocide is economical terrorism, if that genocide is slavery in general. But this third individual that I learned so much about recently when I was in the hospital for those 10 days, I was reading a book called China, the Jews in World War III. And this is an old book that was published in the 70s. And I learned something new in this book. And it has everything to do with what I want to talk about. I have been talking about the Kahila. I've been telling you exactly what the Kahila is, how they operate. And this audio clip was just an example of one tool or one tactic they do or use. They use economic terrorism as well as the other tactics I've mentioned, such as bringing in hordes of non-whites into our country, promoting race mixing, promoting cultural Marxism. And we need men like Hitler. We need men like Saddam Hussein. We need men like Mao Zedong. Yes, folks, I am not off my rocker here. I read this book called The Jews, China, and World War III. And in this book, Mao Zedong was discussed at length. And what I learned is that Mao Zedong, most people think that he was a communist. Most people think he was, working hand and foot with the Bolsheviks of the Soviet Union. He's known for butchering many of his own Chinamen. Yes, he was called Mao the Butcher, where he killed, butchered, genocided, if you will, mostly the intellectual type is what we're told. But what we're not told is that these people or Chinamen that Mao slaughtered, these were educated men. And I use that word educated in its proper form, meaning these Chinamen went off into the West, to the Soviet Union, to the United States, all throughout Europe, and were taught this Marxism, this communism. And then when they came back to China, they wanted to implement it into the Chinese government. And Mao Zedong would not have that, folks. I used the example earlier, but I don't think many of you could hear me. The man that I am up against right now, on the air at the same time I am, Hush Matzoball, or Rush Limbaugh, he uses the word rhino. Often, rhino, meaning Republican in name only. Well, folks, Mao Zedong was really a communist in name only. Very important that we understand this. Mao Zedong called himself a communist, but he hated the Soviet Bolsheviks. He hated them, and he hated his own Chinamen whom were educated by these Bolsheviks and communists in the United States, in Europe, and in the Soviet Union at the universities there. Unlike Hitler, who claimed to be a nationalist and openly stated that he was a nationalist. Mao Zedong was, in many ways, very similar to Hitler. And I will prove this to you. However, he was smart by claiming also to be a communist. This is how he was able to stir up confusion in the communist world, in the communist circles, by claiming he was a communist, but really being a nationalist, a leader looking out for his own Chinamen, his own Chinese people. Mao Zedong's communists say that although Marxist principles might be universal and constant, the societies to which they are applied differ greatly. Therefore, the results will be different. And in practice, this means that the Chinese communists are the world's greatest pragmatists, trial and error artists. Quite unlike the Soviet communists, the Chinese have always been flexible and their party line has always been adapted to suit internal and external conditions. While accusing the Soviets of revisionism and other crimes against Marxism, now that's just a slap in the face, folks, they cleverly seize the ideological initiatives, always insisting that their own interpretation, their own brand of Marxism is the one and only truth. And you gotta love this strategy. Here's a quote by Mao. Many of our comrades regard this ignorance or partial knowledge of our own history not as a shame, but on the contrary, as something to be proud of. Since they know nothing about their own country, they turn to foreign lands. During recent decades, many foreign returned students have made this mistake. They have merely been phonographs, forgetting that their duty is to make something useful to China out of the imported stuff they have learned. The Communist Party has not escaped this infection. He's referring to the Chinese Communist Party. And folks, I, by suggesting here that Mao was a nationalist, I am in no ways suggesting that communism is good or that I am a communist. I am not. I am neither a communist nor a capitalist, folks, just to be clear here. This is so important here. I want to get into a little background of Mao. I have so many notes. But let's see here. Mao was always rivaling Stalin. He hated Stalin. And Mao called, this is the part here, Mao called for, quote, purges of the spirit. He attacked and belittled his Moscow-leaning Chinese colleagues within his own party, stating that when Moscow farts, you Muscovites admire the wonderful fragrance. Yes, Mao hated the Soviet Bolsheviks. So let me delve further into the thoughts and the forces shaping Mao's world outlook. What Mao thought of the Soviets, I've already discussed and told you here. But there is a woman, Anna von Kleist, and she was close to Mao. And she states that the Mao Zedong, had worked as an assistant librarian at the University of Peking for $8 a month, okay? And it was there that he found the Communist Manifesto, Class War, in the History of Socialism by Thomas Kirkup. However, Mao is reported to have said that long before this time he had read, studied, and analyzed any of those communist books, he'd studied and analyzed a German book entitled Das System der Ethik by German philosopher Friedrich Paulsen in 1899. Now, Poulsen was very popular at the turn of the century and preached an enlightening moral way of life based on willpower and self-improvement. Now, it's said here that he was a popular Hegelian, which I despise the Hegel's Hegelian dialectic. But it's important that the English-speaking world be introduced to some of Paulson's gems of wisdom, which, well, many of which found their way into the writings and speeches of Mao, particularly into his Little Red Book. Now, some of these passages are: goodness is a moral sense, or in a moral sense is an act which is motivated by respect for duty. And good social behavior has also a tendency to improve one's own welfare. Another one: adversity steals the will and gives one patience in the anticipation of the inevitable, and also gives one strength to overcome opposition. Another one here: a people, ein Volk, does not calculate how extensively its dominating ideals come to. In order to realize this dominant idea or world outlook, it is willing to sacrifice everything it possesses, even the life of an individual member of the group. All right? Now, I'm reading these to you for a reason. Summarized and simplified, these thoughts are repeated 1,000 times in Mao's Red Book and in his speeches. And they are also found in many of the speeches of, you guessed it, Uncle Adolf, Adolf Hitler, as well as in his Mein Kampf. They are the same ethical rules which once governed all white nations everywhere. Patriotism, willingness to work, self-discipline and self-improvement, heroism, humility, frugality, thrift, sense of duty, love of one's neighbor, white neighbor, that is, and a willingness to offer freely of one's time, money, and talent towards the common weal. Yes, for your own folk. This does not work when you have international Jews bringing in every race, mixed race, and ethnicity under the sun, folks. But the importance that Mao Zedong gave to Paulson's writing can be deduced from the fact that he made no fewer than 12,000 notations in Chinese characters in his own volume of Paulson's work. And to show the similarity of the writings of the German philosopher Paulson, those of Mao, and also of Adolf Hitler, well, there are loads of quotations that I have right here in front of me. I don't know if it would be good radio to read them all, but these quotes all speak of what I said: willpower, self-improvement. Okay? Now, I also have Hitler's writing here, which I think I will skip through because I think you get the point. We all know what Hitler is about. But what I'm doing here is trying to paint a picture that Mao was very similar philosophically to Hitler. And also, even closer to Eric Ludendorff. And if you don't know who Eric Ludendorff is, folks, well, he was a very significant German who influenced modern-day China being 1970s China under Mao Zedong. Now, everyone has heard of Hitler, but many do not know who Chief of the General Staff Eric Ludendorff was. He was the architect of some stunning German victories in World War I. And as part of his general staff training, Ludendorff had to study events in the Far East. Now, he was, you know, aware and taken against China after the Boxer Rebellion. And he also was appalled at the role played by Jews behind the scenes in the particular trap, in this particular travesty of justice, both in England and in Europe. But Ludendorff cooperated with Hitler in this famous Munich putsch, but handled the situation adeptly. Now, I guess what I'm talking about here is the Boxer Rebellion, from the political standpoint, and the revolt collapsed. But Ludendorff still had quite a following, but he still separated from Adolf Hitler and his National Socialists. During Hitler's imprisonment, Ludendorff, being free, assumed for a time the upper hand in German nationalist circles. However, Hitler, with his tremendous elegance, soon asserted his claim to leadership and was elected in 1933. Okay? Hitler always preached a positive Christianity, but Ludendorff, well, he hated Christ's insanity. And I'm telling you this for a reason, because Ludendorff was a very influential man to Mao Zedong. To the end of Ludendorff's wife, Dr. Matilda Ludendorff, insisted that only Mao Zedong and his followers had fully appreciated the importance of her husband's writings. And she even went so far as to state that not even the National Socialists fully comprehended the struggle being waged in the world, but that Mao fully understood. She thought, in a stroke of genius, that Mao and Chou Enlai called themselves communists and Marxists, for she insisted that by that ruse, they have given their revolution the, quote, coat of protection that Hitler's wide-open anti-Jew and anti-communist revolution lacked. So you see here, Ludendorff, the man who would have been, if it was not for Hitler, who thought very similarly to Hitler. This man, Ludendorff, was a mentor to Mao Zedong. And Mao Zedong was a communist in name only. And he slaughtered his own Chinamen who were taught at university around the world and came home with that Jewish, Bolshevik, communist, and Marxist filth. Well, he got rid of them. He got rid of them because he could see and knew just how dangerous and destructive this Soviet-style Bolshevism really was. And so, in many ways, he was actually more effective by calling himself a communist. Yeah, Mao's version of Marxism is definitely different from Moscow's interpretation. It's really quite amazing. And he hated these Jews, folks. Mao hated these Jews. So, we have the Kahila. We have their boot, their Soviet Union-style boot on all of our throats. The Kahila supports and props up this Jew World Order system so that Jews are able to infiltrate and take over every white country in the world. And not even just only the white countries. They've done it now that Mao's dead in China. They've done it everywhere in the world. They have complete and utter control. And here I have been for the past 10 years at least, railing against Jews, trying to wake up my folk, trying to make a difference in this world so that I can stamp out Bolshevism and communism. I hate it. I don't want it in my country. But hey, my country has been taken over. All of our white countries have been taken over. All of the Mongolian, all of the mixed races, all of the Negroid countries have been taken over by Jews. And they used the Kahila and all of these NGOs and corporations and education and religious systems. And you name it, folks, every institution in the world has been used to destroy. And so I have been trying to appeal to my Aryan folk to wake them up so that we may have even a chance in this fight. And folks, I think I've been failing. I have been failing where I don't feel like sometimes that I've made any difference at all. Now, I know I have, but really, what I always think to myself, what else can I do? What else can I do? And it hit me. I was having a conversation with my good friend, Tiens Klota of Boer Folk Radio. And he gave me, told me a little bit what he's been attempting to do lately. Because Tiens and I are on the same page. We think very, very similarly. And I can't think of anything that I really disagree with him about. But what Tiens told me is that he's been fighting his own people, so to speak, who identify as the right wing. Because, folks, you and I know here at Revision Media and at the Hewitt House of Publications and Radio that the left and the right wing are two wings of the same Jewish bird of prey. And that it doesn't matter if the left or the right is in power, the flight plan never changes. So, the left, not being so dangerous as they were in the past, Tiens and I have realized that it is the right wing who have fooled our people recently more so than the left. Everyone can see through the left, so they're really not a threat. But it is the right wing who has hold the wool over our folks' eyes and are waiting for the right wing to do the hard work that needs to be done. And folks, this never will happen. It's classic Hegelian dialectic, left versus right. It's never, ever, nothing will ever change in our favor. So what Tiens and I were discussing, and I hope he doesn't mind me revealing this little portion because we talked about a whole lot. But what he's been doing is fighting really his own folk who have been hoodwinked by the right wing. And another thing he's been doing, which I am going to start doing, is I'm going to try to start not only appealing to my own Aryan race, as I have been doing for the past 10 years, I am going to try to start appealing to the other races, to the Mongolians, to the mixed races, the coloreds. Hell, I'll even try to appeal to the Negroids. Why can't I? People will think I am a traitor if I start to work with other races when I really don't see any other option, because working with my own race is like pulling teeth. And people of my own race are still stuck in the Hegelian dialectic. So why not I work with a man, a nationalist from India or a nationalist from China, and try to to install my ideals, my Aryan ideals, my separatist and nationalist ideals into other races so that they can take my ideals and my ideas and my desires of separatism and nationalism so they can then therefore spread it amongst their own people. Because folks, we as an Aryan race do not have any power within our own countries anymore. We do not have a military, and if we do fight, we'll be called terrorists. So why not work with the other races? I say work. I'm not saying I want to live next door to them. I'm not saying I want to mate with them. No, folks, I'm saying I think it may be wise to work with them. I've put this off for an awful long time thinking, no, I'll only stick to my own race. But folks, I'm not getting anywhere. Hell, the Jews, they work with all the other races from around the world. They give them false information and propagandize them that it's the white man who's killing them all, who is fucking them over. Again, Richard, I apologize for using the F word. But it is the Jews who is riling up the Negroids here, lying to them, telling them that they have a democracy when in fact it's straight up Soviet-style Bolshevism. So why not, on top of educating my Aryan folk, why not start trying to appeal to some of the other races? We don't have an army. Maybe some of these other races and their countries, well, if we are able to get some sort of war that would benefit us instead of the type of war that the Rothschilds fund both sides. Maybe if we could actually participate in some sort of conflict or war that would benefit our race, why not have nationalist Indians or nationalist Chinamen or nationalist Iraqis fight at the same time in their own countries to get rid of these bloody parasites in all of our nations? So if we can get rid of them in our white countries and have the Indians and the Chinese and the other coloreds and the Negroids even wake up and get the Jew out of their countries, that, folks, would be a legitimate revolution. That would be a real fight against the Kahila and their international Bolshevism. To you non-whites out there, to you non-nationalists, I ask you, why are Jews in Israel allowed, or why is it okay for them to have a nationalist-style government, a nationalist-style country in the Middle East that they've stolen from their Semitic cousins, the Palestinians? Why are they allowed to have a nationalist government and at the same time have dual citizenship in every country around the world? These different Jews have different dual citizenships. Like in the United States, we have 3/4 of Congress, which is the House of Representatives in the Senate. 3/4 of the members in the House and in the Senate are dual citizen Israelis. I wonder how many dual citizen Israeli Chinamen there are. I wonder how many dual citizen Israeli Indian men there are. I wonder how many dual citizen Israeli South Africans there are. We need, all of us need to identify the enemy. And it is the dual citizen international parasite Jew who terrorizes us in all of our countries. This, folks, is my idea of the Aryan Reich. The other races and ethnicities and mixed races, they can call whatever they want. But if we can get them working on our side, if we can get them to start thinking the way that we think, we will have a much better chance of having the Jew exposed for the parasite and terrorist that he really is. This is why I bring up Mao Zedong, because this is what he was doing. He was fighting the Soviet Bolsheviks. He was fighting the American Bolsheviks, because we all know by now that the Soviet Union and the United States were working lockstep. It was the American Jews, the Warburgs, in the shifts, these Wall Street Jews, American dual citizen Israeli-American Jews who were funding the communist Bolsheviks over in the Soviet Union. And then, after World War II, after the nationalist Hitler was destroyed, thus the Cold War was invented. Yes, invented, because it was a stage play, folks. It was a fear-mongering campaign. And all this was, or all the Cold War did, was ultimately help the Jews to consolidate power all around the world. And this is what they did by pretending to be enemies in the United States and in the Soviet Union. They were able to destroy Germany and the rest of Europe. They were able to take full control. This is what Mao Zedong prevented. When he died, well, I'm pretty sure, I've not studied modern day China, but I'm pretty damn sure the mixed race Mizrahi Jews in China and in other parts of Asia, in these Mongolian countries, well, I'm pretty sure over there too. I give you the examples of Saddam Hussein, Hitler, Mao Zedong. I give you my dream, my ideal, Aryan Reich. But since the Aryan race has next to zero power anymore, even in our own countries, I think it wise for us who know what we're talking about, people like myself, people at Revision Media, the listeners at Revision Media and the Hewitt House of Radio, all right, so folks, I hope that you understand my way of thinking here. For 10 years at least, I've been reaching out to my Aryan race, doing everything I can to try to awaken them. And I have awakened many of my folk. I'm not saying that I've not been effective in the awakening of the consciousness of my Aryan brothers and sisters. I think I have been. But now that we know, now that many of us know, I feel we're at a stalemate. We have no power in our nations that aren't even ours anymore. As I've said in the past, recent past, Western civilization is not Aryan civilization anymore, if it ever even really was. It's Jewish. And so, by reaching out and working, even if it's on social media, with separatists of other races and of other nationalities. I don't see why this isn't a good strategy. The Jews, they all work with other races and use the other races against us as proxy armies. Why? Oh, why should we not do the same? Why should we not work with other races and allow the other races to fight for us, not necessarily by our side, but by fighting the same fight in their nations? The more nationalist nations there are and the less internationalism there is, well, Jews lose power when nationalist nations arise. So the more nationalist colored countries or nations, the more nationalist black nations, well, the better for separatist and nationalist Aryan cause. So, if you see me on social media and I accept an Indian man or a China man as a friend, don't you dare think that I'm betraying my Aryan race and that I've sold out and that I want to race mix and live next door to non-whites. No, 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 folks. I want what they want. The Chinaman wants China. The Indian man wants to live amongst his own folk in India, just as I, an Aryan man, wants to live amongst his Aryan folk. However, we have a big, big problem. Unlike China, unlike India, there are no more Aryan countries because the Jews have flooded all of Europe with non-whites. America has been flooded with non-whites. Australia, South Africa, New Zealand has been flooded with non-whites. We really have nowhere else to run. So, since there's nowhere to run, which I hate this white flight phenomenon, look where it's gotten us. It's time we stand up. In our own nations, it's time we stand up and retake what is ours. And if we have to work with other non-whites, so be it. I'm all for it now these days. I may not have thought this way before, but the more I think of it now, the more I think this would be beneficial. So, yes, I hope you understand the Kahila a little better. I hope you read my article about Astana, Kazakhstan. You'll find it on my website. I hope you understand why I say it's Aryans at the top of the Kahila, at the top of the pyramid, and why maybe this time for once in their miserable lives, the Jews aren't lying, that they are God's chosen people. Because if it is Aryans at the top of the pyramid or at the top of the Kahila, using Jews or choosing them to rule the world, hence genociding not only the white Aryan race, but the other races, well, it's very easy to see and makes sense. So, I hope you read these articles I've taken the time of writing and republishing. And I hope next week I will not have so many technical difficulties. Again, I changed the time of my show, hoping that 6 to 8 would be better than 7 to 9. It appears it's been worse. So, please be sure to look into the Kehillah, look into the Circle of 12, look into the Council of 300. Understand that underneath them are the NGOs, such as, you know, the Bilderberg, the Club of Rome, Trilateral Commission. And then under them are the corporations. And then you have the religions, the Vatican, the education university systems. This entire system is ruled and controlled by the Kehillah. And I even read in that article, I'm not sure if anyone heard me or not, but if you listen to the archive, you will clearly, excuse me, understand what the Kehillah is now and why we should not be afraid to use that word and to make it synonymous with Jews. Hell, Jews have the Kehillah high schools. They have all these outreach programs. Hell, I forgot to even go through this. I don't even think I went through it. Maybe I should read this quickly. In 1908, the New York City Police Commissioner Bingham decided that the corruption within his department in New York City politics was directly associated to the Jewish mobs operating primarily in the Lower East Side. Now, he made the mistake of writing an article for the National Review about his intentions of forming a special tactical unit to infiltrate these mobs and bring them to justice. He stated that since half the city was of Jewish descent, that it was not surprising that half the criminals were Jews. The New York City newspapers immediately began shouting anti-Semitism, oy vey, and demanding Bingham's resignation. The wealthy and influential German Jew families of the Upper East Side, calling themselves the Jewish 400, who are the Schiffs, the Oakses, the Salzburger, Adler, Solomons, Lehman, Strausses, Guggenheims, etc., 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 screamed for Bingham's resignation. Delegates from 222 Jewish organizations formed a Kehillah, an unofficial government for all the Jewish community. Yes, folks, this is the New York or the Jew York City Kehillah. But there has been a Kehillah going on since time immemorial, folks. This is why I suggest that it is these Aryan angels, if you will, who is at the top. Because Jews, folks, are not smart enough to actually think these things up on their own. Their organization comes from higher levels, and Jews are merely upper to middle managers. But anyway, I digress here. The Kehillah enforced their rule with whatever force was deemed necessary, and it was financed by the wealthy, but primarily by de Rothschild agents and affiliates, and enforced by the very mobsters Bingham had challenged. Bingham was forced to recruit or to recant and resign. But the Kehillah evolved. I could go on and tie in the Kehillah with the influence of B'nai B'rith and the Anti-Defamation League as, you know, driven fronts. But it goes much, much deeper and bigger. It's bigger than that, folks. This was another thing that I did not go over in the first hour. The Kehillah Immigration Committee is a group of members who are involved in many different aspects of immigration-related work. Yes, immigration. What are we dealing with in Europe? What are we dealing with in the United States? Immigration. An army to displace and genocide the Aryan race. But what more importantly, listen to to who these current subcommittee activities or activists are. They have the accompaniment in housing, right? That's the subcommittee. The monthly protest at Richmond ICE Detention Center. Sanctuary, such as in sanctuary cities. Various ways that the Kahila and its members can be involved in sanctuary work. Now listen, you have the Migration Policy Institute, the Pew Hispanic Center, the UC Hastings Center for Gender and Refugee Studies. You have organizations with national and international focus on immigrants and refugees, and some with local affiliates. Advancing Justice, American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, the Boat Refugee Foundation, which is the Stitching Boot, I can't even say the Yiddish word, Doctors Without Borders, Hand in Hand, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, International Rescue Committee, Jewish Voices for Peace, Kids in Need of Defense, National Network for Immigrant Refugee Rights, Oxfam International. Oh, there's a load of these groups. United We Dream. Folks, these are all part of the Kahila. These are all these type of NGO think tanks that the Jews use not only on an international level, down to the state level, all the way to the local level. This is what Agenda 21 is. This is what and how Jews will conquer the world with their Zionist dream by getting all local governments thinking and acting the same way. This is how Jews will rule the world. Not going to do it on an international level because the world's too damn big. But you get it. At the local level, where every local government is following the same terrorist Jewish agenda, well, folks, that is how they're going to do it. That's how they are doing it. The Kahila starts at the top with the king, and it works its way down to the lowly Sanim who aids and abets the Mossad and other international spy and intelligence agencies. So, there's a little bit extra for you that I should have added at the beginning. I will wrap it up now, and I truly thank you all for listening. And I am very, very sorry about the technical difficulties. So please, listen to the archives. I'd like to thank Richard for helping me out here and for helping me get through all these technical issues. You're a very dedicated man, Richard. I appreciate it. And until next week, folks, cheers.